I'm Don Jeffries, and I've had 6 books published. My most recent book just came out a few months ago, called On Borrowed Fame: Money, Mystery, and Corruption in the Entertainment World. So I write about more things than corruption and politics, so that's my wheelhouse. I write regularly at Substack now. You can find me at donaldjeffries.media or donaldjeffries.news. I'm pretty much all over the place. I also have a couple radio shows, The Donald Jeffries Show and I Protest, which you can find if you're interested. And I always have something to say about current events, and current events have never been more depressing but exciting than they are right
Well,
now.
that's right. Whereabouts are you, Don? Where are you based?
Oh, I'm outside the swamp itself. I'm on the Washington, D.C. suburbs. I live in Northern Virginia. So I'm about less than half an hour away from D.C. So I'm right in the heart of all of it.
Now, look, you've just been writing about the entertainment industry, Hollywood. I mean, goodness me, you can watch the average film from the 1940s and 50s, and you're probably going to get much more entertainment value out of it than you would out of some of this modern stuff. What has happened to the entertainment industry? Who's controlling it? Why is it, the comedy doesn't really seem funny and the drama isn't very engaging anymore?
Well, I think that, although we look back at the studio system in Hollywood, which reigned supreme from the 30s to the 50s, it's the golden era of Hollywood. And they did have the Hays Code, which you couldn't have nudity or blood or too much violence or anything. But still, within those strictures, there was a lot of creativity. You had people like F. Scott Fitzgerald writing screenplays out there. So it's good work. They put out consistent work. You turn on virtually any old movie, I don't care if it's a B movie or not. And it's going to keep you entertained because they had good writing. And as a writer, I can recognize that. They had good writing. The acting was usually fine. The directing was first rate. The cinematography, the sound. Now, you fast forward now, although we have so much greater technology. First of all, we may not have a Hays Code, but we have a politically correct code that's way worse. And so all of the stories are basically hampered by they have to fit into this, this woke politics. So writers are really hampered, and I imagine a lot of writers aren't given a chance either if they don't have the right politics. And I think that's part of it. And just they just for whatever reason, their cinematography is not as good half the time, where you have scenes at night that you can't see, which is ridiculous. Or and even worse, the sound. I mean, I go crazy about the whispering dialogue. You turn on any old movies, and you're going to be able to hear everything Clark Gable or Joan Crawford said, whether they're whispering or not. Now you can't hear half of what you have to turn the t you know your, the volume way up to even hear it. So I think that really detracts from it. Plus, a lot of movies will, I watch a lot of movies, and they will keep me engaged. They'll have an interesting plot, but then they usually just don't end. They'll just kind of peter out, and I say, "What happened?" I have to look online for the plot twist. So there's a lot of answers, I guess, to that. But I think the main reason is because Hollywood back then it was a more more traditional people that ran things, and they had a different set of values. So they tried to put out usually kind of wholesome entertainment that uplifted you. Now, I don't know. You look at the people that are running it, and they're trying to make a point, and half the time they're incompetent. They can't. You don't even know what the point is.
Well, that sounds to me a bit like this, what we call, and it's very much apparent in politics too, is this imposter syndrome. That there are a load of people who are now in this world. They've been injected in there. They've been recruited in there for reasons of nepotism, and as a kind of chummy club.
Right.
That you're our mates. We'll give you a great job, even if you're not competent to do it.
Right. Well, I think we saw during the lockdown, especially a lot of these people nobody knew existed. I think at least in America, we began to see how deep the corruption is, and that it's pervasive at all levels. So now you have in my neck of the woods, we have the school board, tyrants, the members of the school board. That's about as low as it gets. But these people they act like they're, kings. And the parents are trying to fight them, and they can't do it. I mean, the corruption is entrenched at all levels. We're seeing people like the mayor of Chicago, Lori Lightfoot, people like that. Gretchen Whitmer is one of the governors in Michigan. Nobody really knew about these people until the lockdown. Then when they came out, their authoritarianism was on full display. And the difference, I think, between I write about history, and I write a lot about corrupt history and corruption in history. And the difference between historically, there was plenty of corruption. I write about it all the time, but there was a general competence behind it. So you still had the streets got plowed when it snowed. The power didn't go out in a strong wind. that kind of stuff. So when you had a crisis like, you know, we had in Puerto Rico a few years ago, where I don't know if they still have the power on or not. I mean, they can't fix things now. So because the incompetence, you know, I believe the people running thing, obviously, I believe there's, you know, there are conspirators at the top. But I believe they don't even have to tell the people, the Lori Lightfoots of the world. I think they just want let them do their thing. And they know they've put somebody that's totally incompetent in those positions of power that has an overblown ego because of that little power. And they're just going to naturally do things that make the situation worse. And that, of course, benefits.
It's almost like a kind of terminal stage of capitalism. I think of Naomi Klein and her shock doctrine, and also the, you know, this whole idea of disaster capitalism. It's almost as if you can create something by creating this chaos, by watching things kind of fall apart around you. You then can kind of sweep in and you can clear up and you can make a load of money.
Sure. And it, you know, that's it. What's one of the oldest sayings in the textbook of leaders, and that is the order out of chaos, divide and conquer. And certainly in America, I don't know if it's that way in Great Britain or really anywhere else in the world, maybe Canada, but we are so divided now. First Trump, and now the COVID stuff, and now with the Russia situation in Ukraine, things are driving, dividing along those same lines, where you have half the country that is basically swallowing and accepting any narrative that comes along. And you have people like me that are still in a minority, but there's millions of us out. There are millions of us out here that are not accepting it. And it's very frustrating having to deal with the knowing that you're outnumbered. I don't know how it is in your country, but certainly here.
Well, I don't know. I don't necessarily believe the hype. I see a lot of this stuff in the newspapers. I mean, I've worked in newsrooms myself. And I'm not entirely convinced by what's I'm a bit of a not don't believe the hyper, you know. But having said that, of course, there are, you know, society is kind of falling apart in many ways, particularly since the bailouts in 2008, that even local government, central government doesn't seem to have any kind of money to provide services with anymore. And that quite clearly puts power in the hands of the big corporations. You know, the fascist corporations, if you want, the people who like to think that they own everything and own everyone. But look, you know, you're talking there about COVID and Ukraine. Let's do that one by one. What do you make of what's been going on with COVID, Don?
Well, I've written quite a bit about it, and I was skeptical of the entire narrative from the very moment it began. And, you know, I published the statistics on my my social media and my blog very early on when the CDC issued a directive, I think in March 2020 or April 2020, to hospitals to list the cause of death as being from COVID, even if the patient had been tested. Hospitals are making tons of money off of these deals from issuing the poisonous remdesivir, which they know is a killer. Over half the lab animals died when they tested. It should never have been approved. This is part of the COVID protocol.
So hang on. Are you saying that people weren't dying of COVID? I mean, people have lost loved ones.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I have. I mean, this year has been very. My brother died on January 20th. They tell me he died of COVID. He went in the hospital on January 6th for an unrelated. He fell, and he was a hypochondriac. He called an ambulance before I could stop him, and I knew what was going on because once he went in there, I couldn't see him. The COVID protocols are they have to quarantine them for 20 days.
So why did he call an ambulance? What was up with him?
Well, he was a bit of a hypochondriac. We had problems with him calling ambulances for really ridiculous reasons. He had no injuries from the fall. But the first question they ask you when you come in a hospital, I'm sure they asked him that, is, are you vaccinated? He wasn't vaccinated. So they fast-tracked him. They gave him a COVID test. And you know, lo and behold, the 90% PCR, 90% false positives from this PCR test, the guy who invented the PCR test before he died, right before COVID hit, he came out and said, hey, look, you don't use this to die. It's not going to detect any virus. The guy who invented it, so he should know. But they use that. It's completely, it's supremely flawed. My brother didn't have any symptoms at all. He wasn't sick at all. He died in 2 weeks. He was in the hospital for 2 weeks. I never got to see him because of the quarantine. I called, talked to doctors, talked to nurses when you could get a hold of them and told them absolutely no remdesivir. They went behind my back and started giving him remdesivir 5 days before he died. I didn't find out about it till 2 days before he died. I stopped it, but the damage had been done. And there's nothing I can do about it because I had nothing on paper. I had talked to him, and I'm still trying to deal with it. If people look online, they can see I wrote an article about losing my brother to the medical industrial complex. And, I've gotten a lot of attention from it. I've had people on my own show from all over the country that are dealing, including one woman from the same hospital my brother died in. This is happening all over. We don't know how many people this is happening to, but my brother goes on the record as a COVID death. He didn't have COVID.
But hang on, Don. I mean, what makes you think that he died of the treatment rather than the disease?
Because he had no symptoms at all. He was completely healthy when he went to the hospital. And it wasn't until they started treating him. The problem is the COVID protocol is, as soon as you come in, they start giving you various things just because you tested positive, even though you don't have any symptoms. And the killer is they give you remdesivir. Remdesivir, over and over again, I have so many anecdotal stories from people that lost loved ones to this. And again, over half the animals died in the testing for it. It should have never been approved, but it's very profitable. It's estimated that my brother probably, the hospital made about $100,000 on his death. That's about the average they make because they get a bonus for every fake 90% false positive COVID diagnosis. They get $13,000 worth. This is under the stimulus proposal from our government. They get a certain amount for putting the cause of death on the guest certificate as COVID, and they get a huge bonus for using remdesivir.
Listen, Don, you're painting a picture there of your hospital as a kind of death factory.
We call them killing fields. Yeah, they really are. And I we already have one of the worst medical. I call it the medical industrial complex. It's a horrible. I worked in the field for 44 years. I worked in IT. But I saw a lot. I saw the sausage being, and this was before COVID. Since COVID, there it's completely profit driven. You guys don't understand what your national socialist healthcare. Our system over here is completely driven by profit. Big pharma rules the day. Remdesivir is one of the most profitable products of big pharma, and they're not going to give that up. And that now that they've created this COVID thing, my family feels the same way. Oh, he died of COVID. No, he didn't die. There's no question in my mind, Tony, that if my brother had never gone to the hospital, he would be alive and well today. He was very healthy. He didn't have any comorbidity, nothing. But it's not an isolated incident. This is happening. I'm hearing from people every day. Same kind of thing happens. And of course, it's the normalcy bias because most people just look at you. Oh, what are you saying? Oh, I'm telling you, I don't think they set out to kill anybody. But the problem is they're told to follow the protocol. They trust the protocol.
This is an old concept, really, isn't it? Well, I say it's as old as George Orwell. You know, the groupthink. So people just like to go along with what they think is the majority view. And in fact, we've got all these polling organizations that will stand up, look you in the eye and tell you, this is such a very popular character here. And then they roll out the next kind of zombie politician. But anyway, look, what about the Ukraine? Because everything changed a couple of weeks ago, didn't it? Suddenly COVID is all forgotten about.
Yes.
And Ukraine has taken over the news agenda. What do you think is going on there? Because a lot of us in Europe are a bit concerned about this, particularly with the Russians being a nuclear power. And if any problems do, I mean, a NATO pouring weapons into Ukraine, as they have been since Christmas time. And so we had basically at Christmas the Russians saying, look, we really must have a new deal for security in Eastern Europe. And rather than responding to them, NATO decided to pour anti-tank weapons in, anti-aircraft weapons into Ukraine. And the Russians have finally decided after a vote in the Duma 3 weeks ago or so, that's in the middle of February, 14th of February, I think it was, that they're going to go in and protect these two breakaway republics in Ukraine. So we feel in Europe, Don, that we could be on the front line of a war which has actually been started by Washington.
Yeah, absolutely, Tony. And I'm suspicious of all war, and so I know these things are caught. I believe that like Benjamin Franklin said, there's no such thing as a good war or a bad peace. So I instinctively am always against war. In this case, this is a typical American in engagement where we have no interest there at all, none. And I tell people all the time, and they say, I understand Vladimir Putin has, I can understand his rationale because I know if NATO if Russia or China put nuclear missiles on the Canadian border, We certainly would have an interest in that, and we wouldn't take kindly to it. That's basically what's happening there. Putin objects to that, so I think he has a, you know, a case. But that doesn't mean I think he's a good guy. I don't think they're, and I don't care. I got to tell people, I don't care who's the good or the bad guy here. It has nothing to do with America. There are bad things happening around the world all the time. Horrible things. You can't, and if you lived in America, you'd understand how much it has sunk. I call us the world's wealthiest banana republic. We're a joke. Our roads and I live in one of the wealthiest counties in the United States. The roads and bridges, the infrastructure here is a complete joke. The power grids out here, they go, the power goes off in a strong wind, and I live in one of the wealthiest areas of the country. We need to take care of our own self. We have a terrible disparity of wealth. Half of America has nothing. The bottom 50% has less than 1% of the collective wealth. We have, and that was before the shutdown, and they've completely destroyed small business with that. We're culturally divided. We're to the madness where you have, you know, people arguing from a science point of view that men can have babies. We are just completely lost and hopelessly divided. And we, you know, it's like if your roof is caved in and your kids are starving, you don't leave them there and go out in the neighborhood and try to feed the other kids. I mean, the neighbor's kids. That's what America's doing. And the idea that, you know, we're sending, I forget how much aid they want to send to Ukraine, but it's a huge amount. But you have people in the streets of San Francisco and L.A. that are defecating in the streets, and they don't even attempt to clean it up. We have homeless cities, tents everywhere in those areas that are wealthy, and nobody's doing anything about it. They won't spend a penny on that. But they're sending money to Ukraine. And, of course, our southern border with Mexico remains wide open. And yet we're concerned about Ukraine's border. So this is madness. But the war fever has already worked here. I see it on people. I stand with Ukraine. They're waving. Nothing works better than war propaganda. And it goes back to, you know, in our country, it goes back to the war of 1898. And it's worked ever since. And they don't even change the script. And it just makes me very disillusioned to know that people continue to be that stupid, that they keep falling for the same propaganda.
Yeah, I think we're going to have to start learning from history. Otherwise, the human race is going to become extinct. One of the things that Putin said when he announced the invasion of Ukraine in his speech, I think it was about sort of 30-minute speech, which has hardly been reported. It was in the Spectator, a magazine here in the UK. He said in it as part of that, he said, yes, in fact, until recently, attempts have not stopped to use us in their own interests. He's talking about the Western NATO here, destroy our traditional values, impose on us their pseudo values that would corrode us, our people, from the inside. Those attitudes that are already aggressively planted in their countries and which directly lead to degradation and to degeneration because they contradict the very nature of man. He said, it won't happen. No one has ever done it, and it won't work now either. Now, this seems pretty clearly aimed at this whole sort of LGBT rights, the trans rights, and that sort of thing, saying, well, you know, the West is trying to do this. It's not going to work. It never has worked, and we're not having it here.
Right, right. Well, and that's the, again, I come from the left, back when the left was sane. So I'm about as far left as you can get economically. And I wrote the book Survival of the Richest, all about that. My hero is Huey Long, you know, the great wealth distributionist who they assassinated back in 1935. But today's left is absolutely mad. They're certifiably insane. I mean, when you're telling people men can have babies, there are 57 genders, you're banning use of the word, you're saying it's wrong to say boy and girl and man and woman. This is insanity. You can't have a functional society like that, and no one else on the left will say anything about it. And I don't care. You know, I'm very open-minded about everything. I understand there's been transvestites for a long time, and that's fine. Whatever turns you on, I don't care. But to try to put it on an equal footing, to say that you can not pretend to be a girl, but you actually are one, and you're, I mean, that's where we're at now. And this is just madness. And it's, you're never going to get whatever sane amount of Americans that are left, 40% or whatever it is. You're never going to get them to accept that. You can hit them over the head with it. You can put it in your school board meetings, but my kids are older now, but boy, if my kids are young, you would see me on every viral video, because I would be right there with those parents to be, you know, it's insane to be teaching these kinds of things to kids as young as kindergarten. I mean, you not only have the, you know, telling them it's okay to change their sex when they don't even know what sex is, but also, you know, when they're not even aware of what race is, to try to, you know, have to tell the little white kids they have some kind of guilt and there's something wrong with them because they have privilege. I mean, this is child abuse, and it's happening now. And just in addition to everything else, that's why I say, we talk about war anywhere, that's the last thing we should be concerned about is Ukraine's borders or anything else. We have our own house is about as messy and disorganized and dysfunctional as it could possibly be.
Yeah, I suppose it's the idea really to just distract people, isn't it? You know, there's something very important going on over here. Right. We had in Britain, we had this thing in January called Partygate, where Boris Johnson was being criticised for holding these so-called parties after work during the lockdown. And all of a sudden, everyone is looking in a completely different direction. And we've even had the leader of the opposition last weekend, Keir Starmer of the Labour Party, saying, oh, I withdraw my call for the Prime Minister to resign, you know. So he's almost like the perfect puppet. But look, one of your books, which I found absolutely fascinating and I've not read the whole thing, but, you know, to read some extracts from, Don, is Bullyocracy, mm-hmm. How the social hierarchy enables bullies to rule schools, workplaces and society at large. And I find this fascinating because we in our journalist union, we had an anti-bullying campaign, which ended up with the person who was spearheading it being basically bullied out of her job. And so this is it's almost as if you should get very, very worried if your workplace, such as the National Health Service here in Britain, has some sort of anti-bullying policy, because as soon as you try and implement it, it's going to turn on you and kick you out of your career. But anyway, why did you choose this term bullyocracy to describe society at large?
Well, I mean, that was just a term I came up with. And, you know, I've always been interested in it. And again, my brother, who just recently passed away, he kind of inspired it because he was bullied. He was 8 years older than me, but he was bullied when he was in high school and picked on. And he had that kind of personality. And I have a niece with Down syndrome as well, who went through a lot of horrible things, obviously. So I dedicated the book to both of them. And so I was, you know, kind of always sensitive to that. And I just, you know, I've never understood bullying. I don't understand picking on people. And I understand it's done to, because your self-esteem is low and you were trying to build it up. But the problem is our society, at least in America, I have a whole section of the book where I went over a bunch of prominent individuals, and, you know, virtually every one of them was popular in high school. Now, that doesn't mean they were bully, but the bullying is tied to, that's why I call it the bullyocracy, is tied to the concept of popularity. And this is where I get in trouble with the so-called anti-bullying experts. They don't want to go there because they don't want to solve the problem. They just want a virtue signal. And again, this is the same thing about transgenderism or anything. It's virtue signaling to say, we're going to start an anti-bullying campaign, when in fact you don't. And I show over and over in the book that even the anti-bullying, so-called anti-bullying experts, they always side with the bullies. And I mean always, every single time. They never side with the victims. They don't want to solve anything. They want to virtue signal and make themselves feel like they're doing something, but they don't. And that's why the problem doesn't go away, because they don't look at what's causing it. And I think I've put my finger on it, and that is the social hierarchy. It's the concept of popularity. So, but to do that in our America, I don't think you have that problem in the UK schools. I don't, unless maybe your football, soccer is that popular. I don't know. But in our schools, football and basketball especially fuel the popularity, and they have cheerleaders, the girls, the cheerleaders. So everybody knows who the most popular kids are, and that's where your bullies tend to come from, especially the football players. And it took a long time for studies to admit it. You know, before they would try to say, well, it's the loser, you know, the kid that's being beaten up by his father. So he's, you know, he lives in a trailer or something on the other side of the track. So he's coming and he's taking out his frustrations on everybody else. Well, that's very rare. They found that the bullies, especially with the mean girl syndrome with the girls, it's always the most popular girls. And in the case of the boys, they pick on the so-called nerdy types. And it's usually the big one or two of the big football players. The rest of the people enable it, and the teachers enable it, because they don't do anything. They don't, just like in our society, we don't stop any of the high profile crimes, whether it's an athlete, an actor, or a politician. They're not held accountable the same way that you or I would be. the average person is. So no one can respect that kind of law because it's not applied consistently. It's the same way in the schools. They don't apply the rules consistently. So when these kids, popular kids, do something awful to unpopular kids, the teachers are all on the sides of the popular kids because they want the favor. They want to be liked by the popular kids. They don't care about the unpopular kids.
And well, it almost sounds like, you know, a kind of training for the cult of celebrity in the entertainment world.
Yes.
When they grow up, you know, whether that be in popular entertainment or in sports, say.
Yeah, well, and that's I think I was the first one to draw a parallel between popularity in school, in high school, and success in life. And really, to be popular in high school, that's basically successful. You're navigating those waters as successfully as you can. So you're basically a celebrity. The most popular kids in every school are famous in their own way. All the kids know who they are. They don't know all the kids.
I mean, this is a fascinating topic, actually, because you often find that the people who so much crave popularity are the people who are in some way deeply insecure. And probably it's almost going back to what we were saying about imposter syndrome, maybe the least appropriate people to have that approval.
Yes, sure. Absolutely. And we see it with our police officers here. Because of their personalities, and they're chosen for those personalities. That's why you see the Cops Gone Wild video and you see them exerting their authority, because they're limited. Actually, most people don't realize that most police departments have a cap on IQ. So if you have an IQ over 100 or 95 or something, they don't hire you. Now, why would they possibly want that? Because they want people that aren't asking questions, who have a syndrome. They want to abuse their authority. So you're right. They're putting the wrong people in charge. And that's part of the problem. It's a bully mentality. And as I showed, you know, if you have society being run largely by people who were very popular in high school, that translates into adult life. First in college, where you have the vast majority of the Fortune 500 CEOs, and I showed that, you know, were in big fraternities in college. The fraternities and sororities take over and they refine the bullying. They call it hazing then. But it's the same kind of thing. It's exclusion. It's, you know, we're cooler than everybody else. You have to go through all these rituals to be in our fraternity, and we're going to do some kind of psychosexual stuff to you usually to do it. But, you know, but we're, nothing's wrong with us, but we're still going to do that. And it's all these kind of traditions that, again, are defended no matter what. They've led to the deaths of a lot of pledges in these fraternities. And then once you get into these companies, the CEOs all have bullying characteristics. And so do most of the politicians. You look at Trump and Biden, both have real bully personalities. And there's lots more like that, but it's very evident in them. And this is it's basically sociopathic or psychopathic tendencies. And as a study that came out of England that talked about the prevalence of people in various occupations who had psychopathic tendencies, and all of the occupations that are the ones that we all want to go into that have the most power, you know, any kind of celebrities, actors, athletes, CEOs, doctors, lawyers, all of these have, even clergymen, they all have the highest percentage of psychopaths. So these are the people that are running the country, and they experienced the social hierarchy in high school, and they just continue in life. But nobody, I realize nobody's looking at this like I am. And that book has not sold very well, unfortunately, and I wish it had done better. But I've heard from a lot of people who read it and loved it because they went through this when they were, I mean, people don't realize how many middle-aged and older people are never lived normal lives because of what they went through in high school, the trauma. And that's a tragedy.
Yeah, I think, children can be particularly cruel,
yes,
aren't they,
yes,
John?
Yes, absolutely. And to have, I can't think of anything sadder than to have somebody decades later, I've read, you know, people that still wake up screaming with nightmares from what they experienced in school because they can't wrap their minds around it. And the hardest part is that it's kind of like victims of child abuse. And the thing about it is, like I say, you know, somebody who is victimized by bullying to that extent is every bit as much a victim and should have our sympathy as much as a victim of child abuse, as sex abuse as a child was. Now, we don't, because usually the experts even tell people who are bullied, well, you know, kids will be kids. you know, you grow, they've grown out of it. You need to get over it. That's what they tell them. Now, do we tell victims of child sexual abuse that? Well, you know, some people are bad, you know, get over it. And of course not.
Well, you know, yeah. Someone that's worked in mass media myself, I can testify to the unbelievable amount of bullying that goes on within newsrooms. I mean, it's definitely something which was tolerated probably in the 1980s when I first started, much less. And then I saw it taking off in the 1990s and all sorts of rather nasty techniques used to, you know, basically frame people, to right. demonize them, to remove them. Then nepotism used as a way to get, you know, new people in to take their places, that kind of thing. So I'm pretty concerned about what I see as Don, on this topic over the last decade or so, probably more than that, actually, where we've had this, every now and again, we get a kind of massive chant, don't we, that, well, it was originally Colonel Gaddafi's got to go. You know, this guy's a terrible man. We've got to get rid of him. It's not our country, but we have decided that he's going to have to go because he's evil, he's bad, he's killing his own people, or whatever it happens to be. A kind of hate campaign, really. But it's something which the media kind of inspires. And anyway, after that, it was President Assad, another really terrible, evil man. He is going to have to go in Syria. He's the president of Syria, but we're going to have to remove him. So every time you switch the TV on, listen to the radio, open a newspaper, there's some sort of atrocity that he's supposed to have committed, even though perhaps it was actually some of our special forces that were behind that atrocity. and now the latest one is Vladimir Putin. And it's quite important to recognize that he has been implementing a decision of the Russian Duma, the parliament. And you might say that the parties there are corrupt or whatever. But the idea that this is all Putin's making is just simply not true. He's made a few demands, one of which is that Ukraine must not be part of NATO, that the breakaway republics of Donetsk and Lugansk, they've got to have some autonomy from Kiev, and also that the part of the Crimea has got to be allowed to join the Russian Federation, and that Kiev has got to give permission for that. And if those three things are sorted out, then all this could be over tomorrow. But no, it's not going to be over tomorrow, because Putin is the evil one, blah, blah, blah. I just wonder if you think this fits into almost a kind of institutionalized version of this bullying on an international level.
Well, sure. I mean, these, again, bullies, the first, every trait that a bully possesses comes right out of a psychopathics book. I mean, the same qualities you see in serial killers, they're just more exaggerated, is what you see in any kind of a bully. And obviously, to rise to that position of power, you have to have a lot of those traits. So, but the people that misrule us, the people that conspire, that twist things and misrepresent things. You talk about the media. Just imagine, the media has already been caught, as they are all the time. And thank goodness that they haven't eliminated the internet yet, because you have all these memes out there and these people that are finding a lot of the videos and film that they've shown so far of the Ukraine actually weren't purported to be. They were either, one of them was from China, like in 2016. Others were from last year. So they're representing things. We don't even know what's happening, because they're showing video and film of things that aren't happening now and are, you know, demonstrably proven to be. And I saw one. They talked about the exodus from, you know, people dramatically leaving Kiev or something. Well, somebody looked up and saw and matched the scene to, I forget the name of the movie. It's like a movie, Sudden Impact or something, from 10, 15 years ago. And they put them side by side. They just took film from that movie. Now, you know, this is why it goes beyond mere sloppiness. The people that are at high levels in the media and government, you can't call them anything else except willful conspirators. I mean, you have to be really psychopathic or evil to do something like that, because you're misrepresenting a reality, and you know that the public is so gullible, they continue to believe these things, and they're just going to roll their eyes when somebody says, hey, wait, this is the same thing out of a movie. Oh, sure it is. That's a conspiracy theory. They're not going to investigate further. They're going to turn on their TV and be assured by people in our Mockingbird media, because the media still is full of Operation Mockingbird from the CIA. people that are in assets there that are basically doing what the intelligence agencies want them to do. They're parroting official, what I say right now that our media in America, at least, and your media is probably the same, that the only difference between our media and TASS and Pravda at the height of the Soviet Union is that the Soviet people were smart enough to know that this wasn't any kind of, you know, independent press. They knew that this was state-controlled media. Most of America is too dumb to realize that, and they actually think that CNN and MSNBC, that these, the New York Times, Washington Post, they think they're actually getting independent news from them. And that's the problem. Just one big national television station or something that would tell the truth could bring this all down, because people, they'd start believing. They're not going to believe when somebody like me goes on shows like this or my own show or writes on the platforms I have. They're not going to believe me. But if I went on, you know, CNN and said the exact same things, they, oh, that makes sense. The people are just, they judge, you know, what's the source here? The medium is the message, as Marshall McLuhan said a long time ago. And that's our problem, is that we don't have a free press. We don't remotely have a free press. And so the people are woefully uninformed, and they're just sitting there, and Vladimir Putin is the latest in what H.L. Mencken called an endless series of hobgoblins. And they've been around since 1898, where we demonize something in a foreign land to take attention away, to distract the people from all the problems at home and from their own corruption. You know, they might start looking at what you're doing and let's say, look over there, look at that guy, look at Putin, we have to do something. And that's what they do. And it's just sad and frustrating for people like me to know that most of my fellow citizens continue to fall for it time and time again.
Well, they do, but it's the job of journalists and writers to do what they can to set the record straight. Look, back in 1989, the fall of the Berlin Wall, there was this thing called the Cold War was supposed to have gone away. Well, it's getting hot again. Mm-hmm. I wonder where you think this could be heading, and what should we be looking out for? It's obviously not going to be so much of a problem for the United States of America there. You're about 5,000 miles away from all of this. Well, we're actually sitting here in Europe wondering where the hell is this now heading?
Yeah. Well, I do fear that this could become World War III. I hope not. But again, I don't see anybody. There's not a JFK in the bunch. There's nobody there that has any common sense. These are all actors. Literally, in the case of Zelensky, he's an actual actor. This guy's a comedian who was hired as a role and was playing the part. And one of his roles was to play the part of the president of the Ukraine. So, you know, amazing, you know, that he actually ended up being that. But Putin, we don't know. I don't know. Putin, I don't trust any of these people. Obviously, Biden has dementia. He doesn't even know where he's at. And the people behind him obviously are not. There's nobody saying in America, there's no voice of sanity. I mean, you have Nigel Farage over there, I guess, who I kind of like. But in America, we have nobody that has any voice here. I mean, Donald Trump is, you know, you saw what he did the other day, where he just, you know, again, made a laughingstock out of himself. So let's bomb the hell out of Russia. Let's put Russian marks on planes and bomb China, or China bombing Russia or something like that, and blame it on the other. It's like, you know, what? I mean, what kind of a leader does that? But that's our opposition here. We have nothing here. We have nobody that's sane that has any kind of power. And
I think you probably do, actually. It's just that they're kept very, very well away from the public eye, Don.
Right. I mean, the ones that have, they don't have big, I mean, Tucker Carlson here on Fox News is about the best voice we have in the mainstream media. And he does what he can, but really he's the only one. Everybody else on Fox News and all the other stations, they are just competing with each other. We got to do something. And I keep trying to tell people, what do you want us to do? We have two options. One, we can actually send military forces under the guise of us so that it does, that will precipitate World War III. You really want World War III? We could have nuclear weapons. Okay, that's a good idea because you care so much about the Ukrainians. And the other option is sanctions, and which they're already starting to do. And the sanctions are not going to hurt Russia. They're going to backfire on America, and we are in the worst shape economically we've ever been. I mean, the cost of living here, the gas prices alone have shot up so much. Housing, rent and housing prices are through the roof. Food prices are through the roof. They've never been this high. and people's salaries are not going up, and we have an unknown number of people that are unemployed because the unemployment figures we give out are completely fake and phony and have been that way since the 1990s. And
well, it almost sounds as if we're arriving at the Great Reset, doesn't it? You know, the
Klaus
Schwab is you will have nothing but be happy. And that happiness is something that you'll get through some sort of happy pill rather than any kind of natural happiness. Because you were saying right at the very start, Don, that, you know, you've got loads of, you know, so many people there who literally have nothing already now. So we seem to be heading towards this kind of wonderland of Prince Charles and Klaus Schwab.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, unfortunately, you know, a lot of people see Putin as a good guy. He certainly seems like he has a case here. But, you know, I've seen the pictures of him shaking hands with Klaus Schwab. And the same thing, I saw the pictures of Donald Trump laughing with the Clintons. So these people, it's almost like, you know, this is a big joke to them, and they're just fooling the masses. They're state actors. I said in the case of Zelensky, he is an actual actor, and there's nothing we can do to stop World War III if that's what they want. I mean, and I do think we should all thank Putin for one thing, is that the minute he rolled into Ukraine, COVID disappeared. I mean, that was it. Nothing worked until then. But I mean, and just it's unbelievable how seamlessly people who had been swallowing the social distancing and mask up and a bunch of different boosters and all that crazy stuff, and, you know, swallowing all that stuff and screaming science at you if you questioned it, they just seamlessly went into this I stand with Ukraine, waving the Ukrainian flag and posting pictures, you know, of some woman holding a baby. You don't even know where the picture's taken. And there, again, it's all emotion. Emotional identity politics is based on emotion, and it's taken over America. It's taken over our law, and it's taken over completely the sensibilities of the people, because all you have to do is show them a picture and there's no context. Well, where is that picture at? As long as the media tells you this is a Ukrainian woman holding a baby, that's all you need. Oh my God, I'm ready to send my firstborn to die for this. And that's what they're doing. And I don't know how, like I said, it's very disillusioning. I find it harder and harder to deal with average people, including most of my family, because, you know, my experience with my brother alone, you know, they thought I was nuts before. And now they completely think I'm completely off the deep end to be saying the things I'm saying about that. But, you know, I'm not going to stop speaking out until they send me send us to the FEMA camps, which they may do. You know,
well, look, let me just slide this one in, Don, because you could see, I mean, Putin was brought up in the Russian intelligence service. His friendship with Boris Berezovsky, the chief oligarch in the 1990s, who eventually ended up putting him in power as a president, as he thought, a puppet president. He's quite a clever character, I think, particularly through, say, for example, with the World Economic Forum. He wants to be in all those places. He's buttering up these people. You know what he's actually doing is he's buying time. He's buying time for the Russian military to get into the position where they can confidently do something that they did 2 weeks ago, which is to go into Ukraine and say no to NATO, to say, actually, no, we're not going to be putting up with it, you advancing, creeping in towards Moscow anymore. And we've now got a military which is up to the job of facing you guys down. After 20 years, Putin is now confident enough to do something like, for example, what he did in, I think it was 2015, go into Syria. Mm-hmm. This month or last month, February 2022, to go into Ukraine. So maybe he's been playing this as a long game.
Yeah, I mean, I pay very little attention to foreign policy for America, because and I think, you know, there's a reason why all American politicians stress foreign policy, and it's always to be strong. And basically, it's to push for war. It's to defend Israel at all costs. And it's to basically, you know, say we need to do something, which, again, means sending money, sending troops, keep the military industrial complex going. I've just concentrated in domestic affairs. We have so many problems in America. It's a joke. And the last thing I want to withdraw, I am a diehard isolationist. I'm like George Washington, who in his farewell address said, no entangling alliances. Or John Quincy Adams, you know, one of our earlier presidents, who said, you know, America does not go abroad in search of monsters to destroy. Well, that's all we've done. in my lifetime is going abroad in search of monsters, and they're imaginary monsters. They're not even, I mean, these are people, in the case of some of the people you mentioned, Noriega, Bin Laden, Hussein, these were all people that the CIA created and were our so-called on our side for a while. I mean, Bin Laden was on our side in the war with Russia in Afghanistan.
God, this is almost sounding like Hollywood, isn't it? Turning into foreign policy.
It is. It's what it is. And that's what, you know, this is WWE theater. It's like pro wrestling. It's so, I mean, Trump is a perfect kid. Trump is in the WWE Hall of Fame, by the way, if you doubt it. He's very good at this. And there are people that, you know, when you look at somebody like Zelensky, I mean, this is a foreign, I don't know if you see it or not. There's videos out there. One of this guy's tricks as an entertainer, he used to go on, I don't know how they, I guess they didn't actually show it, but he went on TV and played the piano with his penis. This is a world leader and a comedian. America has, I mean, not the world has turned into just a complete joke. I mean, the idea that somebody's going to take somebody like that seriously, really? I mean, what next? Are we going to have a porn star as president? Why not? I mean, we've had everything else. And
well, they have. They've done that sort of thing over in Italy for quite a long time. You know, the pornography is basically soft porn TV wall to wall over there. Yeah. Anyway, look, Don, if you just remind us of the title of the two books. I think one of them was about the entertainment world and the other one was about the bullyocracy.
Yeah, well, those are my two latest books, On Borrowed Fame, Money Mysteries and Corruption in the Entertainment World. That came out at the end of last year, so that's still out there and has a lot of great stuff on a lot of the unnatural deaths in Hollywood and a lot of the economic disparity, why so many people got paid so much more than everyone else, and it's very unfair and irrational pay structure. Bullyocracy, how the social hierarchy enables bullies to rule schools, workplaces, and society at large. That came out the year before that, and again, it talks about lots and lots of case studies. It's a very depressing to read, but it's all real. I talk to a lot of these people, and it's a very important problem that no one's addressing. And as you noted, this you can look at what's going on basically, because you know, really, isn't war maybe, if you look at it in some way, isn't that maybe the ultimate form of bullying?
Yeah, absolutely. So, can you just remind us about your radio shows, website, social media, that sort of thing?
Well, the Donald Jeffrey Show airs, no, it's not airing tonight, but Donald Jeffrey Show normally airs every Wednesday from 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Ocelli.com and also some terrestrial radio stations. And Jeff Rentz Network is a pretty big alternative network. He broadcasts reruns of it. And I also appear on Jeff Rentz every Monday night, 9 p.m. Eastern for commentary. My show, I Protest, that live streams over my Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube channels, and also on Rockfin, America Unplugged at Rockfin, live every Friday from 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern Time. So you can find, you know, and again, I write at donaldjeffries.media or my Substack articles, and donaldjeffries.news is my blog. So you can just search for me and you'll find out a lot of information.
Okay, Don Jeffries, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.